This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
It feels like Friday.
It is Monday. It's a beautiful Monday.
It feels like
sunny,
Friday.
Sunny, shiny, and glorious in the Willamette Valley. Welcome, everyone. This is Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to 1430 KYKN. This is your place for local talk about issues and institutions and ideas and individuals to talk about in Salem and in Kaiser, Marion, and Polk County. This is the place to be. We have a series of guests. I'm going to get right to ours today because we only have them for about a half a show. But we have been doing a series on everyone who's running in a contested race for the school board. And in here in the studios with us is Chuck Lee, who's been here before talking about the Career Technical Institute. And Chuck, he wears many hats and has worn many hats. He's president of Mountain West Career Tech Institute, of course, in his involvement constant involvement with the Career Tech School, and he does some consulting as well with Lee Consulting Group, and he is a president emeritus of Blanchet Catholic. I think I will always associate Blanchet Catholic School with you and vice versa, Chuck, and welcome to the studio.
Thank you, and it's probably because of the quote that I always used to use at Greeters at Blanchet. Mm-hmm. We always say, where there's a will, we want to be in it.
And I think I've stolen that a couple of times, but I do credit you. That's a great line. Where there's a will, we'd like to be in it.
Right.
And that was your job. You got to raise money for the viability for long term for the school, right?
Right.
And build that up.
I like to say I've got a career raising money for kids is what I do.
Nice. Okay, so in addition to that, you're giving away some of your time to serve in this volunteer group of school board members, and you've been there now 3 full terms.
Correct. 12 years.
12 years. Holy cow. So you're seeking a fourth term.
That's right.
And you're contested this time.
Yes. Well, I have been contested every time.
You like the battle, you know, getting up and improving yourself every 4 years, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what he's in it for.
All right, let's start with
that and the pay.
You know? Yeah, right.
The pay. It's a strange thing in our community where people have to go and beg for the privilege of giving away their time and expertise. Right?
Yeah,
for
right.
A volunteer
for no
job,
pay.
Right?
Yeah.
And right, go and ask people for money. That's probably not your favorite part as well. You need to raise money to run for these. We were talking about this last week about how much money is being raised for school board races. Do you find that's more and more necessary?
It's very expensive in a way. We run by zones. I've been representing Kaiser for the last 12 years, as I said. But in an election, if you've got competition, you need to campaign throughout the whole city because mm-hmm. people in West Salem vote, South Salem, Central, East Salem. And so it just takes a few dollars to do mailings or, you know, literature, yard signs, that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. As the city has grown, both cities have grown, it just gets more expensive to get your message across. So,
well, let me ask you the obvious question, and we ask all the candidates come through Newsmakers. Why? Why do you want to do this? What's next up that you want to experience and be there for the next 4 years?
Well, the reason why is that I've been in education for over 45 years, and I've been the head of about 6 or 7 different schools. And I always make community service a requirement for the students. I came to Salem, Kaiser, in 1997 to help start Blanchet. And I was so intent on trying to get Blanchet up, raise the money to buy the facility, to equip it, etc. I realized I wasn't modeling community service to the students. Mm. And so, as long as I'm involved in education, I think it's important for me to be a model of community service. So I love this community. I love Kaiser, and it's always been a great honor to be able to have community service in that particular area of First, it was the Keyser City Council for 7 years, and then the last 12 years, it'll be it has been with the Salem-Keyser School District. 4 more years will get me up to 23 years of community service in this community. So,
wow. Yeah. 7 years in Salem City, Keyser City Council.
Yes.
And you segued right into the school board right after that.
Yes.
So I read a quote by one of your school board members, Jim Green, about, you know, how crazy it is that people are working so hard to go from the volunteer position where everyone's yelling at you, which I thought was amusing. <'Cause>, and no matter what decision you make, you know, some people are going to be unhappy about it.
Sure.
Do you find you get people that appreciate what the school board does when you do something right, or do you just get people that come to meetings and like to tell you how you're doing it wrong?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, over the long run, it's very rewarding work. I've been the liaison from the board to the political action committee that has passed 2 bond measures while I've been on the school board. And that's raised over $1 billion in this community. And when you look at all of the developments we've been able to do for the schools in those 12 years, it's very rewarding work. Yeah, you have people who show up at board meetings during public testimony that are unhappy with one thing or another, but usually it's up to the staff to deal with those concerns.
So you, part of the decision recently to change some of the boundaries to reallocate some families and students to different schools to correct some overcrowding issues. Tell us a little bit of how difficult that was and where you sided on that.
I was not as involved with that as other school board members were. But again, back to the bond, we wanted to do what we could to accommodate the growth in this district. We're growing by about 500 kids a year in the school district. And so you never know where those kids are going to be settling, what grades or whatever. So a big part of the work that was done early on was making some decisions rather than open a new school to expand the capacity of many of the schools and take care of some ongoing maintenance issues that we have in the district. So that requires some boundary shifting. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we didn't decide to do a new high school, which really would have created some boundary issues if you put a new high school. Instead, the decision was made to expand the capacity of all 6 major schools to 2,200.
Wow.
Mostly, they're at 1,800 now. So that cut down on an awful lot of the need for boundary shifts.
Wow, 400 per high school. So I don't know if you know this, about how many people go to your average elementary school at Salem-Keyser Schools?
400 to 800.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So when you say you are growing, we are growing by 500 students a year, it's basically the equivalent of every student in an elementary school.
Yes.
I mean, it's spread out, and obviously in middle school and high school, but that gives you a picture that this is...
That's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of kids to grow, to try to accommodate. Are we going to need another high school on the drawing plans before, if you were to serve another 4 years before you leave?
I don't see that happening over the next 4 years, no.
Okay. You'll leave that to somebody else.
I mean, one of the reasons I want to run for reelection is because we just approved the last bond, and now we're in the process of implementing it, and I want to be part of that process. So it's going to take us a couple of years to do the build-out that is going to be necessary with that $620 million bond measure.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're talking to Chuck Lee, president of Mountain West Career Technical Institute, amongst other things. And he's running for the school board. He wants to serve another 4 years after his previous 12. We're going to come back. We're going to ask him about his long, long list of supporters and also what is left undone that he wants to stick around for. This is Brent with Dave at 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and our friends at Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We have Chuck Lee in the studio today. We're talking about his run for school board. He's currently serving on the school board.
And what position? I forgot to ask.
Zone 6.
Zone 6, which is primarily in Kaiser.
Yes.
Right. And, of course, all of you who live in Salem-Kaiser school district boundaries will get to vote for or against Chuck Lee.
Right.
So let's talk. You know, one thing I want to show, because Chuck brought in some of his campaign material, and you may be getting this in the mail.
Ooh, fancy.
But in it is a long list of supporters, Chuck. I mean, that is a long list of supporters, and it's pretty broad. You see this as indicative of that you've proven yourself or made a lot of friends?
Yeah, I think it's indicative of how I approach problems. I'm not very partisan. I try to respond to people on both sides of the aisle. The other thing is once you've been in office for 12 years, you have opportunities to interact with a lot of people in our community. So that's helped a lot as far as... you know, if you look at that list, Brent, you'll see I've got people like Peter Courtney on it and Jackie Winters, Mayor Bennett, some city councilors, school board members, people involved in law enforcement across the board. So I'm proud of the fact that I appeal to a broad segment of our population. And basically, I think most of the leaders in this community I've had a chance to meet and work with through the private part of my work, but also through the school district opportunity I have as a board member.
Well, I would say, Chuck, you're right. You have an opportunity to meet a lot of people, and a lot of people are very interested in education in the community. But some, you know, there's making friends and there's not making friends. Apparently, you've made some friends along the way and done some work.
I have a lot of friends.
So this is, I don't know. I think it's, you can hit the website. We got a pledge. Make sure you guys know how to look at Chuck Lee here in terms of casting your vote and where to look for more information. So Chuck Lee for SalemKaiserSchoolBoard.com. I have a feeling if I just Google Chuck Lee School Board, that we'll find your website.
Probably. I've never looked at it myself.
So. Chuck Lee for SalemKaiser Chuck Lee for SalemKaiserSchoolBoard.com is the campaign site. And you're watching your flyers. Hey, ballots are probably hitting the mailboxes.
They're out.
I got mine last week.
So the ballots are out.
I've already voted. So
he's already voted. Hey, and that's a voting trick. We'll talk to you after Chuck leaves so we don't waste Chuck's time. A lot of things. Obviously, your job gets you interconnected with the Career Technical School over on Portland Road. That's been such a success and such an inspiration and such a model. Tell us a little bit about your ongoing relationship with the Career Tech High School.
Sure. I started leading the effort to develop that, excuse me, in 2013 and worked closely with the Salem-Kaiser School District to establish a public-private partnership to provide a career technical education center for the district. For 30 years, that was one of the goals of the district, is to have a CTE center. And what I'm proud of is that, first of all, we were able to develop an MOU between the Salem-Kaiser School Board and the district with Mountain West. Our obligation to that has been to purchase a facility. We purchased the Nielsen Manufacturing Facility that closed in 2008, in 2014. So we purchased the facility, renovate the facility, purchase the CTE equipment, which is considerable, and then we lease it to the school district for $1 a year, and they pay all the operational expenses. So it's been a public-private partnership where we, meaning Mountain West, has been able to bring philanthropists, foundations, corporations, business, industries, city government to the table to provide resources the public schools can't afford.
Can I ask you a question about that? It seems to me, you're serving on the volunteer policymaking board, but you're also working for the company that is part of that private part of the public private. So you're kind of representing both sides of the public and private partnership. Has that been an asset or has that been a rub?
I think, you know, I've had to abstain from some votes to begin with. But no, it's been a real asset to be on the board, to be able to communicate with other board members and people in the district to make this thing happen. So it's been a real asset. And another reason I want to continue to run or to serve is that we're not done. And I want to see this project through to fruition before I leave the board. We started with two CTE programs. Over the last 4 years, we've added two more each year. Next year, in September, we're going to open agriculture and culinary arts. And that'll fill the building up with 10 CTE programs.
That's Whoa. Awesome.
So we have school boards from across the state and nation coming to look at CTEC to see how that can be replicated in their community. Max Williams, who's the executive director of the Oregon Community Foundation, they were in for $150,000. And his main goal is that as much as he supports the program, this is something that can be replicated by school boards, school districts throughout our state. So it's been exciting.
So 10 programs and then the building's full.
Right.
Wow.
It'll have over 1,000 kids. The other thing that's kind of interesting is that this year we had room for 600 students for next year. We had 823 apply for those 600 spots.
Wow.
So, and again, as a school board member, I'm very supportive of CTEC, but CTE in general. Our graduation rates as a district is not strong, but 98% of the kids that go through CTEC graduate. They find that any kid who has a CTE class, at least one in their experience, has a 10% chance of graduation than those who don't. And in Salem-Keizer, in the six comprehensive high schools, we have, I believe, 42 different CTE programs.
Wow.
So it's a big deal.
All right. And if you're just joining us, it's Chuck Lee running for school board for his fourth term. He's been there 12 years. And CTE is career technical education. And that's where you get job training for real life skills. And a lot of these people going through CTE, career tech. And if you're of a certain age, you know, there was a period in which they called a shop.
Right.
Right. You did wood shop, you did metal shop, and then you did computer shops or computer type classes and training and that kind of thing. But nowadays, you know, we're talking of culinary arts and agriculture coming in along with the original manufacturing and construction and so forth. So
robotics, 3D technical design and gaming.
Crazy to get those
cosmetology, business leadership, public safety.
Public safety is, yeah.
They're all huge programs out there.
So that is amazing. So let's end the graduation rate is a huge success. Are there other things in the district in education that you think we're not there yet that you want to be there for the next 4 years? And specifically, you know, the graduation rate. Is there anything that the policy body as a school board can really do? Or is that really the job of the superintendent?
The school board has just one employee, and that is a superintendent. And again, while I've been on the board, We had Sandy Husk, who was the superintendent at the time, resign, move on to something else. And we did a national search for a new superintendent. So we feel we've got an excellent superintendent in Christy Perry. We really want to keep her in, and she's doing, I think, a good job. But, you know, we have challenges in the district. And as usual, it boils down to budget. Every year we go through the budgeting process. We're doing that right now. It's always difficult because we have to approve a budget by June 30th each year, and we never know what the legislature's going to be authorizing for the general fund until who knows when, you know.
Right.
And so
which
that's
is a problem.
A challenge.
And it shows some weakness in our legislative strategy, but go ahead.
We have class sizes that are too big. We need more teachers to lower class size. We need more counselors. Right now we have one counselor for 500 kids at the high school level. Nationally, the average you try to strive for is 250 per counselor. we have kids coming into our school system, good kids, but coming from toxic situations where they have some real severe needs. And we're starting to hear more and more from teachers on the difficulties they're having in their classroom because of the kids that are coming and just causing disruption and things. So we need more support for them. All of that costs money. And if the Ways and Means budget that's been approved so far is adopted, that basically freezes everything. So we're not going to be able to do much more than what we've got right now with those dollars. So the budget is always a big challenge, and it's my hope that over the next 4 years we can do some things to increase the revenues to give us the resources to take care of some of those issues.
Well said. Would you tie a direct line between the budget and the graduation rates, or is that a different, more societal, more cultural thing that's related to absenteeism and other issues, like the social service issues you mentioned?
Yeah. You know, there's I've always been interested in the fact that there's a direct correlation between academic success and class size. And the smaller the classes, the more individual attention the kids get. And so I think that that's a big part of it.
Well, we have about a minute left. I just give you an opportunity to tell us about your long history in education and what sets you apart and above the voters' alternative in your race.
I just go back to experience I've been, like I said, I've been in education for over 45 years, been on the school board for 12 years. We have a lot of new school board members, good people, but they lack that sense of history of hiring a superintendent. They lack the history of the budget. Policy governance is something that a lot of people don't understand. It takes a while, which is how our school board operates. I've been endorsed by the teachers in the district. I'm endorsed by the bus drivers, the secretaries, the OEA, Stanford Children's endorsing me. Pacoon is endorsing me. I just have a lot of support because of the experience that I've had. So I really urge people to keep that in mind when you go to the polls, that it would be, I think, a benefit for the Salem-Keizer schools to maintain some of that stability and collaboration that I bring.
And that wisdom, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, in the age of wisdom.
Yeah, All right.
So we're talking to Chuck.
I knew you were going to get into age.
Well, Chuck, you know, do you just kind of had let out that you had a birthday this month, so we're thinking about you. Chuck Lee, running for school board, Zone 6, but you'll all be able to vote for him as you wish, and your ballots are out. Folks.
That's right. Fill them out.
I hope having him here has helped you all understand what the issues are and what the role is and what Chuck brings to the table. President of Mountain West Career Tech Institute, Lee Consulting Group, and of course, President Emeritus of Blanchett Catholic School. Chuck Lee's running for the school board. You're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Stick with us. We're going to have another surprise guest before the end of the hour. But for now, we're going to say goodbye and thank you to Chuck and best of luck to you and have a great time at Keizer Fest.
Thank you. I will. And thank you to both of you. Great. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming in.
The Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly sponsored by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We have a guest here to talk about taxes and things happening in the legislature. I can't wait to get to. A couple things about our previous guest, though, Chuck Lee. Mentioned that the ballots are out. I don't know if you're aware of this trick, but if you do not want phone calls and if you do not want mailings to fill your mailbox during between now and election day, vote early.
Yeah.
When you vote, everybody pulls all the political consultants pull who's voted and who hasn't voted every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day after the ballots drop. So once you voted, you're going to stop getting mailings and you're going to stop getting phone calls.
That saves time and money for everybody.
There's a trick.
Right?
Interesting thing with Chuck, and we could talk about him for the rest of the hour if we had time, but policy governance, he was touting his experience in terms of you need somebody there who's been there before, and of course working with the budget and hiring a superintendent, and
budgets
also
are not easy.
The bond measure getting passed, and
no,
so all
I
right.
I can't imagine running my household budget. It's like, okay, we have these kinds of expenses, but we don't know how much money we're going to get. So yeah, cross our fingers and hope.
All right, we've been talking on Newsmakers about all the tax bills and all the revenue increasing opportunities that the Democrats have in the Oregon legislature. And I'm trying to get a handle on how much it could possibly be and what it really means. So we reached out to the Oregon State Director of the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses. We have Anthony Smith. He's been a guest of Newsmakers before, and he's a busy guy. I imagine he's spending a lot of time on these policy issues himself. Anthony, welcome back.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm glad to be back.
How many hours a week are you spending in the Capitol?
I mean, I just came from there. I'm there every day, pretty much from, you know, anywhere as early as 7 o'clock sometimes for an early meeting to whenever the evening committee adjourns. They have had evening committees. I want to say every evening except for Friday evenings this session. So it has been a grueling session already. And right now we're really kind of at the height of the contentiousness.
Right.
It's a lot of big stuff is happening last week and this week.
A lot of things fall off and before they even get to here. If they haven't got a committee hearing, if they're not passed out of committee, now they just hammer it out and try to get passed on the floor, right?
That's right.
And are they having hearings with like short notices and things like that?
Not yet, but that will come at some point. Probably when they say that sine die is imminent, then yes, we go back down to 1 hour posting notices, and that can be challenging.
Wow.
Running from place to place.
Would you say that there's a record amount of bills and things moving this year?
I don't know that for certain. It seems like there were a lot of bills. I mean, thousands of bills that
thousands?
Were in, oh, yes, oh, yeah. Absolutely. Thousands of bills were introduced, and that's not entirely unusual. But there's no getting around the fact that this was an ambitious session starting out for the majority party, primarily, I'd say most of the things that were on the wish list are still in play.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So the bill we talked about last week, or it's going to be hot on our minds today, is $2 billion of new taxes to business. That's all going to come out of the private sector somehow. And they'll always like to say it comes out of somebody else's pocket because it sounds really good to everybody. You know, it's going to come out of their pocket. And $2 billion is a huge increase. I mean, that is a lot, and that's just one of the revenue generating or higher taxes promotions. It's passed the House, correct?
Yes,
Anthony.
Yep.
So now it goes to the Senate, but it's already kind of been through the Senate as far as being everyone's briefed on it, right?
Yeah. So this is kind of an unusual bill because one of the things that the legislature did at the end of the last year's session, the short session, was created a new joint committee, and it's the Joint Committee on Student Success. And so they traveled around the state in the interim building a case for all of the needs that we have in our public education system. And I think that there's a lot of consensus on the needs side, there's not that consensus on the how do we pay for it side. And so one of the features of a joint committee, and this is just kind of the way the legislature works, is if a bill comes out of a joint committee, it goes to, you know, the first chamber. So it went to the floor for a vote, and then it technically gets referred back to the joint committee. But since it's already been passed in the joint committee,
it
just goes straight to the Senate floor. So that's one of the big things. And news is happening right now, guys. As I was leaving the legislature or the Capitol building this morning, we found out that Senate Republicans, only two of them showed up today. And that there's going to be a press conference at 2:30 at the Capitol to find out a little bit more about why only two of them were present today. And they're alluding to the fact that none of them may be there tomorrow, which is when they want to vote on this huge, massive $2 billion per biennium tax increase.
Is it fair to say that NFIB is not supportive?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we've been pretty clear on that from the get-go that, you know, this is, again, setting aside the debate about the need in our public education system, how we pay for it is very, very important. And voters just, you know, 3 years ago in the 2016 general election were adamantly opposed to the concept of a gross receipts tax. Mm-hmm. And that is the heart of what this funding mechanism is. It is a tax on a business's gross Oregon sales, not on its profit. You could actually lose money and still have a significant tax bill as a result.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, we're talking to Anthony Smith, Oregon State Director of NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, about what this means to Oregonians. This is going to trickle down. I mean, people are going to be able to see it. In a sales tax state, you see a receipt for whatever you bought, and then there's a tax line. Will businesses be able to do that?
No. And that's one of the reasons why voters will remember in the Measure 97 campaigns that it was promoted by the opponents as a hidden sales tax. Mm-hmm. And that's really how it functions, is there's a supply chain, obviously, and when a product gets taxed every time it goes through each stage of the supply chain, that relatively small tax rate ends up being a lot bigger as it pyramids through the supply chain. So you're taxed at the production level, you're taxed at the wholesale level, you're taxed at the retail level, and so that end consumer ends up paying essentially a sales tax, but they're not paying the small rate that what we're being told is a small rate that each business is responsible for, but that pyramids, it stacks on top of itself through the supply chain.
What mm-hmm. kind of rate are we talking about?
We're talking about a 0.57% on your gross above $1 million. And one of the things that advocates, proponents of this bill have said is that it effectively exempts small businesses because of the $1 million sales threshold. Well, you know, that's not true, because even if you are under the $1 million in sales, your small business still buys things from other businesses that mm-hmm. are subject to the tax. So Oregon consumers and small businesses as consumers are all going to see increased prices for the things that they buy. And businesses, you know, sometimes turn around and sell those things that they buy. But everyone's going to see price levels increase as a result of this. And the legislature's own economic modeling shows that.
You're so nice. You're diplomatic. I would have said that's a flat out lie, is what I would say. Not to mention the fact that a lot of small businesses have $1 million in receipts that aren't making very much money.
Right.
You know, it could be, you know, printing doesn't have a huge margin. Car sales don't have a huge margin. We know groceries, which are exempted, but gasoline retailers don't have a very big margin. There's a lot of companies. I mean, used car sales. I mean, it doesn't take a huge amount of cars, even at a used car lot, for a mom and pop to reach $1 million threshold and pay this tax.
And, right. And, you know, to your point there, you were talking about groceries and fuel taxes. And to the credit, I suppose, of the advocates, they have crafted this with some intentionality. Mm-hmm. They've exempted groceries, the retail and the wholesale purchase of groceries. But still, you know, that broccoli or carrots or whatever it's going to be, there are still stages in the supply chain that are not the wholesale stage or the retail stage. So that's going to still be subject to some pyramiding. Also, the transportation fuel sales, gasoline, diesel, that money goes into the Highway Trust Fund constitutionally. Mm-hmm. And so it's exempt from this because this revenue raising bill was created to fund education. So from the very beginning, fuel sales was always going to be exempted because that money can't go into the pot of money for schools.
Well, thankfully.
So, well, I guess so. But there are other things. You know, you mentioned the car dealership. You know, we have a sales tax on cars now as a result of a 2017 transportation funding bill that created a new sales tax or a privilege tax on the sale of a new car. And so there's some cleverness worked into this bill that you don't pay the tax on top of the tax that you already pay for those excise taxes, privilege taxes, and anything else. I mean, we have lots of sales taxes in Oregon that maybe people don't realize, but, you know, there's cigarette taxes, beer taxes, new car taxes. There's lots of things that are subject to taxation that, again, don't end up on a receipt, but people, you know, end up paying. I mean, it's the end user, the consumer, who ends up paying that.
Yes, and we have friends of the show and sponsors on the show, the car dealers. And I talked, and I don't know what it is now. This was several years ago, but I remember talking to somebody who was running a car dealership, and they said, boy, I just dream of the day that I could clear 2% of my sales. Two.
That's
and then
small.
I was reading, I know, I'm reading an article. I apologize, I'm not able to cite who it was, but the point was the math. If you're making 2%, a 0.57% tax is a quarter of your profits.
Yep.
Well, and
it's
they,
not 0.57, it's 0.57 of everything you sell. So if you're only eking out 2% of that.
Yeah, and in the car dealer situation, they actually can pass that privilege tax that they pay onto the car purchaser. I know I did that last year when I bought a car. But this is not going to work like that. This is not something that you can, you know, stick on an invoice or a receipt and pass along to the customer in the same way as that privilege tax.
All right, we're talking to Anthony Smith on here on Newsmakers. We're going to come right back and talk about what else is going to come that he thinks is going to get passed that might hurt Oregonians. You listen to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're talking with Anthony Smith of NFIB, a great resource in terms of watching at the Capitol, looking out for small business in Oregon, which, frankly, face it, folks, our economy runs on small business, and we have friends and family members that own their small businesses, so many things that qualify a small business, and that's where jobs are created. And that's where individual freedoms and individual self-sustaining and everything else is creative in the small business sector. So thank you for your battle and your work and trying to explain this incredibly complicated bill. You were talking during the break about how many exclusions there are and how many rules this, and you have an offset this and this and that, but it's still going to raise $2 billion.
Yeah,
right?
At the end of the day, we're talking about a revenue-raising bill that's $2 billion per biennium, so, you know, over $1 billion per year that we're taking out of the private sector economy, and we're taxing. It's a fundamental change in how we tax businesses. The premise has always been, if you make money, if you make a profit, you're going to pay a little bit in taxes on that profit. We're fundamentally changing that to the state is agnostic to whether you make money or not. You could lose money. You could be a startup with some real capital costs up front, but you have some receipts and you're still going to end up paying this tax even if you don't turn a profit.
So many things when you start a business, the startup costs and the ramp up costs of getting a business to its profitability, but you could get to $1 million of sales, lose money, and have to pay tax for the privilege.
You could have a really big tax bill, even if you don't make money.
Oh, I feel like preempting the next couple hours of whatever programming we have so that we continue to talk with Anthony. But we had Representative Denise Bowles, a Republican from South Salem, here, and you know, her eyes kind of wide. She said, well, we knew they had all these bills and they had all these ideas, but it occurred to me at some point in the session, I'm paraphrasing what she said, but they plan to pass all of these things. So we're talking during the break about the totality of this. How many things, what things are still in play or that have already been done?
Well, that's the fear. I mean, as scary as it is to talk about a new $1 billion+ per year business tax, I mean, that's just one piece of the puzzle. The Carbon Reduction Committee is still meeting. They're discussing cap and trade. That's, you know, a proposal that's well over $1 billion per biennium. There's still a paid family and medical leave program, a new payroll tax on employers and and employees that is estimated to raise about $1.5 billion in new revenue. You know, they already took $108 million of the kicker. They already passed the Medicaid taxes, the premium taxes that you might remember as Measure 101 in a special election a couple years ago. Voters upheld that, but they came back with an even bigger bill, actually raised the tax rate at the beginning of this session, and that's a tax on health insurance premiums. So when you add all of that up together, it's over $5 billion in new revenue for this next biennium, this next budget. That's a significant number when you talk about our total biennial budget. I mean, it's always somewhere around $21 billion. So a $5 billion increase on a $21, $22 billion budget, state budget, that is a lot of money.
Holy cow.
Folks. Is there a plan to try and slow everybody from moving here?
Well,
because I wouldn't want to move here if I saw that they were trying to raise, you know, $5 billion a year more.
I guess it depends on who you are. You know, if you're
my family budget doesn't have that in there.
Well, I mean, I guess if it depends on if you're going to pay it or if you're going to get something from it. So
how many of those things like happen today? Does that still have legs? Are they going to get it through? Are they going to come down the last days?
You know, I think what we're waiting to find out. You know, a lot is still hinging on this, you know, corporate activities tax, the $2 billion for public education. It kind of looked like early in the session, cap and trade was going to go first, and then that kind of stalled, and everything's kind of hinging on this. So, you know, with Senate Republicans saying potentially they might not be there for a vote this week on this bill, you know, that might throw a little wrinkle into the timeline on what gets done and what doesn't. So We'll have to wait and see on what the future holds for you know, the other really big ticket items out there like cap and trade and paid family and medical leave. You might have heard about the governor's plan to raid SAFE, the workers' compensation for to pay for PERS. So, and that's another thing that all of this is hinging on too, is the business community, I think, has been pretty united on insisting that something really has to happen on PERS. And while maybe we're not as united right now on opposing taxes, you know, that's still, I think, a common ground for everybody in the business community who knows that we're going to end up paying this bill.
Let's back up a second. Tell us about the name on this thing. And that's like really misleading, a corporate activities tax.
That's what they're calling it, is the corporate activities tax, but it's actually a tax on any business entity. So not just corporations, C-Corps and S-Corps, but LLCs, partnerships, sole proprietors, everybody's in on this. There's been some speculation as to why they called it the corporate activities tax, and one of the theories is that that's what polls well. So take that with a grain of salt, but
I'll take that as gospel right there.
Right, yeah.
Is that some focus group of political consultants say, well, it sounds better if we're going to tax. It comes down to the thing, we're going to take it out of somebody else's pocket, so it's going to be okay. Try to pretend that we're not taking $5 billion in the next 2 years more out of the 20 billion we usually have out of the private sector. All right, we got about a minute left. So many things to talk about. So this Wednesday, there's a walkout in terms of a proposed walkout from schools having to do with trying to fund the quality education model. And even this $2 billion per biennium in this corporate activities tax is not going to cover even the quality education model, right? So we would anticipate that's still going to pass even if the Senate passes this.
So I don't know. I mean, we're just going to have to see. I think that, I would struggle to say that Senate Republicans can't show up for the rest of the session. I mean, the state police will be out there looking for them if they don't show up. Mm-hmm. So one way or another, this probably gets voted on. I'd say they probably have the votes right now.
Scary stuff. And the governor as well. Anthony Smith, NFIB. We have to have him back on. You've been listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.